Good morning, this is Daz on The Cat, The Toon and The Red. And joining us this morning is author, actor, producer, promoter, YouTuber and top radio presenter. Please welcome to the show the amazing Steve Wraith. Good morning, Steve. How are you doing?
I'm very good, mate. I'm very good. You're making us do overtime.
I know. Thank you. I do appreciate it. You're sticking around after the show this morning. Now, you are one of the three fan presenters on the North East Footy Breakfast Show. You're the Geordie with a huge passion for Newcastle. Mm-hmm. Tell us about the show, as you regularly lock horns with a Macam and a Smoggy. It can't be easy.
Yeah, I mean, look, it was an interesting concept that Dave came out with, you know. I mean, it was a while ago now, and we're talking probably early 2023 when I got the call from Dave. And I knew Dave Roberts previously from you know, his job at Sky. Back in those days, I was writing the Number 9 football fanzine. I was quite often doing radio and TV, and Dave was doing a bit of work with Sky, of course, in its very, very early days.
Yeah.
And, you know, we just, you know, we always knew of each other and kept in touch after that. And Dave kindly, you know, gave us a shout last year and just said, look, I'm setting up these new radio stations. I'm thinking about doing a Northeast fans football program. Didn't say breakfast at the start, mind. but we're looking for presenters, and I think you would tick the box. So it was, you know, it was up in the air a little bit as to what it was going to be, and then yeah. You know, subsequent calls and messages, and then we got together. We sat and had a coffee in Newcastle, and we chatted about it. And he said that the idea was for the Northeast Footy Breakfast Show, a Newcastle fan, a Sunderland fan, and a Middlesbrough fan all on together, you know, having a bit of banter and yeah. You know, banter as in, you know, not out of control, not yeah. You know, no nastiness, just humorous banter and a bit of ribbon that you would get amongst your mates down the pub when you all support a different team. And yeah. I'm really pleased to say that it came about. And you know, we struggled in those opening weeks to get a regular Sunderland fan. Yeah. Obviously Rye and I have been there from the start. But yeah, I mean, since Ted came in, it's been complete. You know, we've got three great lads, three lads who are all, you know, well up for, you know, a bit of banter, who know the football clubs inside out. And yeah, I'm delighted to be part of it. It's been great, and I think it is good as well, because you've got that kind of, I've grown up in the Chris Evans era, where
yeah, yeah.
Chris has always had producers and people involved in the show, and I think your involvement and Dave's involvement, they both bring something completely different. Yeah. A, you know what you're doing. B, Dave doesn't. A, you're funny. B, Dave isn't. So you know, it's great, really. It's good crack, and that's my P45 firmly in the post, I believe.
You're used to talking about your beloved team, because you also have a massive YouTube channel as well.
Yeah.
You do your NUFC Matters show. How often do you do that show in a week?
It's 7 nights a week. It's wow. not something I ever really wanted to do, mate. To be honest, right. It was just lockdown.
Right.
And
yeah.
my livelihood, you know, before lockdown was events. You know, I'd gone from, you know, various jobs into doing events as my main income, alongside the acting, because, you know, unless you're a Hollywood A star, or unless you're a, you know, a regular on a soap, then, you know, actors tend to have a lot of time off. So you need something else to make money. And you know, I've done events for 25 years, mainly Newcastle United events, but also, you know, I went into boxing and stuff like that. So when lockdown happened and COVID hit, then it just destroyed my industry. From my perspective, I had to find something else to do, not only to keep myself occupied, but also, you know, I make no bones about it, for my mental health. You know, I like routine and I like structure. And that was something that I brought into it. And so obviously I revisited it in lockdown, and people are sitting in the house. So I started it on Instagram rather than on YouTube. Mm. I was pulling in about 1,000 views, you know, live viewers on Instagram. So we did it for a couple of weeks. Then I introduced a fans one with a couple of one of my best mates, Neil Mitchell, and then brought another guy, Steve Hasty, in. Called that the Three Amigos, and that really proved popular as well. And I thought, right, okay, I'll change this onto YouTube, to see whether it'll kickstart the YouTube channel. And sure as eggs it did. And that's it. So then I thought, right, okay, well, I've got plenty of time. You know, lockdown is not coming to an end soon. Maybe I could do one on a Tuesday. So, you know, I was doing the Amigos on a Friday. I'm doing Super Mac on the Thursday. I'd added John Gibson to that. And then I literally started this journalist one with Liam Kennedy from the Shields Gazette on Tuesdays. And that was popular. And I thought, wow, this is something. So I then just started doing different shows on each day. I did a fans forum. I did an all-female show with female supporters. I picked a one which was global. So I had fans from around the world on. And that's it, really. I found a slot for a show every night. My target audience was 6 o'clock. I made sure that the demographic was over 18 because, you know, there was lots of podcasts out there for 18-year-old, you know, 18 and under. Yeah. So I decided to go for the older market, the older fan. And never really looked back. NUFC Matters has gone from strength to strength. And we started off in lockdown because the channel had been operational with those videos on. I think we had 9,000 in 2020, and it's currently sitting at 51,000 subscribers now. So it's, from something that started from, you know, lockdown, it's gone from strength to strength.
And you talking about your team 7 days a week plus 5 days a week on the North East Football Breakfast as well, it's clear that if they cut you open, Steve, you would be black and white. What were your earliest memories of going to the game?
My first game was Keegan's last in the 2-2, benefit game, my Feeders in Kev game at the Shrine that is St James's Park. My granddad was a referee back in the 50s, and he was an official in what is the Premier League now, but was the First Division back in the 50s. So he would referee and he would be linesman. He went from that into being a referee assessor, where he sat in the stands and gave the referees marks out of 10 for their performance. So my granddad had took me to every game in the North East apart from Sunderland, and the reason being that A, he was a Sunderland fan, and B, he couldn't officiate, because he was a Sunderland fan, Sunderland's games. So he took me to Hartlepool, he took me to Darlington, he took me to Gateshead, he took me to Middlesbrough, and he took me to Newcastle to watch games. And in the idea that I would, you know, decide what my football team was. And I was a huge Gateshead fan. I saw a lot of Gateshead games. Right. And at the time, I saw Terry Hibbert play. Terry Hibbert, of course, had been a wonderful player for Newcastle back in the 70s, and basically given the fired the bullets for Superman to score the goals, if you like, and he was a hell of a player. And I saw them get promoted, but I'd gone to Newcastle and it just blew me away. I sat in the director's box at all the games. Well, going to the director's box at St James's Park was amazing. I remember walking in, I had to dress up for it, whereas I could go in jeans and t-shirt and a coat for other games. I had to wear dress pants, I had to have my hair combed, I had to be really smart. I went into the old Milburn stand, as it is now, but it was the old West stand. It was made like a corrugated iron. You had to walk up all these stairs. But then I got into this boardroom, there was like sandwiches laid out, and as I walked in, there was these like guys who I recognised in there. There was Jackie Milburn, there was Joe Harvey, there was Bobby Cowell, Stan Seymour, who was the chairman. And it was just like a land of celebrities, This being Keegan's last game, his wife was there and his kids were there, and it was just a unique experience. And I remember walking into the stand for the first time and seeing the pitch and seeing the crowd and hearing the crowd, and that was football for me. I just thought, this is my club. And my dad was a Newcastle fan, and he never ever wanted to push me into supporting a particular club. He just wanted me to find my own club like he had. And I think my first recollection was when Keegan signed in 82. I used to work in the newsagents that my grandparents had. I used to put the supplements into the newspapers and go and deliver papers if the paper boys didn't turn up. And that was it, I remember my dad going, "I can't believe it. I can't believe it." And it was back page of the paper, "Where in heaven we've got Kevin," and Kevin Keegan had signed for Newcastle. And that was it. I think that was where the seed was planted, but it was firmly rooted and grew, when I went to that first game. And from that moment on, I'd say that was my first game, and I've never looked back. And, since 1984, I think I've only missed 15 games at home, which is
wow.
You know, a pretty good record. Like,
that is
pretty good record.
We're chatting with Steve Wraith from the North East Footy Breakfast and local North East actor as well. Chat more with Steve after this, which is one of his song choices. What are you going to go for, Steve?
That's Entertainment by The Jam.
Now, football isn't your only passion. Something else you started at a young age is your love for performing. You've mentioned it already. Now, at 6, you got your first acting role, playing King Canute in a school play. And by 11, you were part of the Young People's Theatre in Heaton, following in the footsteps of Pet Shop Boy Neil Tennant. That took you to America and Russia. What was it, Steve, that gave you that acting bug?
It's a good question. I don't know. It was potentially what I watched on TV, but the King Canute role at 7 is, you know, that wasn't my decision. I think my mum and dad realised that, you know, I was a good talker, I was a good reader, and you know, maybe that was something I should do. You know, they encouraged me to join that particular class at school, and you know, I performed as King Canute. But as time progressed, getting into the People's Theatre was, you know, was again, my parents had said, look, would you like to go to it? Do you think you should do it? Would you like to go? I put myself on the waiting list and I went to the People's Theatre, and I just thoroughly enjoyed it. It was Saturday mornings, 10 o'clock in the morning till 12. kids my age, and basically we would go up there, do warm-up games, improvisations, script reading, and then there'd be castings, and then you'd be performing. So, you know, I did a multitude of plays in a short space of time. I was picked up by the adult part of the People's Theatre as well. They wanted me to do, you know, play kids' roles in the adult performances that they did. And, you know, I did Cider with Rosie, which you know, I got my very first review in the newspapers when I was 13 for that. I just, you know, I had the bug. I really enjoyed it. And that was probably why I didn't stick in at school, because I always felt, well, I don't need this and I don't need that because I'm going to be an actor. And, you know, I didn't stick in with any of my lessons until it was too late. So, you know, I wasn't the brightest of, you know, pupils. Me mum and dad had us in a state school to start with. And I was a year and a half behind with me reading. That's how bad the school was in, that I was in. So when they moved me into senior school, they put us into private school to try and like resurrect me, you know, me failing educational career. I did catch up, but it was, you know, it just, as I say, the acting took priority, and, you know, I just wanted to do that. And I had a lot of mates there, good friends. I was very lucky that I got a chance to go abroad, like you mentioned. I got a chance to go to America as a 13-year-old. We toured Oedipus Rex for 3 weeks in Philadelphia, New Jersey, and New York. And then we did Russia when I was 16. We did Moscow and Leningrad, which was St. Petersburg. We did, we traveled to St. Petersburg on the overnight train, and it was just as the wall was coming down, really, just as communism was coming to an end. They were building the first McDonald's when we were in Russia. But I did the Artful Dodger. That's how I played the Artful Dodger and Oliver Twist in Russia. So it was great, a unique opportunity to travel abroad with the theatre company, and gave us that experience. And my heart was set on being an actor until I left school, went to college. And, you know, I basically went to Newcastle College. I was on the BTEC diploma, which was the very first year, which was set at the Tyne Theatre on Westcote Road. And I did the first year, but it wasn't what I thought it was going to be. And I ended up being cast in a pantomime at Christmas. And I signed a contract. I didn't get paid what I should have for the contract. I didn't get an equity card, which I should have been given, which you needed at the time. And I basically, you know, I was doing 50 shows in 3 weeks, sometimes doing 3 shows a day at the age of 17, putting the set up, doing a pantomime, taking the set down and going on to the next venue. And it was like slave labour. And it put me off acting. I basically decided I'm going to walk away from it then, and I did for 17 years.
You went into security and looked after some very famous celebrities. You organised a range of events with footballers and celebrities as well. Was this an exciting time of your life, or was this quite stressful, particularly the security work?
Yeah, I mean, look, the security work came along because I was getting bored with the post office. And I mentioned it earlier about, you know, if I think things are starting to wane, then, you know, if I'm not enjoying things, I'll look for another avenue. And the security work, you know, it was surprising. I was running a Sunday football team at the time. I'd gone in and captained a team when I was 18. And by the time I got 19, the manager decided to quit. And, you know, I was playing centre half. And the lads had said, look, you know, I was captaining the team. Why don't you take it over? Otherwise the team's going to fold. And, you know, I did 20 years running that Sunday football team. But at the same time, you know, I was going out with them and socialising. We'd go to Newcastle, and used to go to a bar, it's now Tup Tup Nightclub. It used to be called Masters in Newcastle. And we used to go there on a Sunday, and you could guarantee at the end of every Sunday night, my mates would end up getting involved in some kind of scrap. And I would always end up going in and stopping them fighting and pulling them away. You know, I wasn't throwing punches, etc. Yeah. It's never been my nature. And one night, it was coming up towards Christmas, Gary the doorman comes up to us and says, Steve, you don't fancy doing the door this Christmas, do you? And I just laughed at him. I said, you're joking. I said, I'm not a hard bloke. He says, well, exactly, that's the point. You don't need to be a hard bloke. He says, I've watched you, you know, over the last, you know, year and a half since you started coming in here with the lads. And he says, you're always in trying to stop people fighting. And he says, that's what we need, you know. I said, well, what's the wage? He goes, it's £25 an hour. He says, there's a Friday, Saturday and a Sunday going. And we'll give you, we'll give you a split of the Christmas bucket as well, which was right. Like, those used to put the bucket on the door. And that was it. I decided to go into doing the doors, which is crazy.
Yeah.
I was in the job for 18 years. Wow. And that, that probably, was a job I really enjoyed. As it, when I was young and I was single, it was a great job to have because, you're literally getting paid for standing on a door. And yeah, there's trouble. And yes, there's problems. But I always work to the same kind of mantra that, you treat people the way you want to be treated.
And was that the time when you did some extra work? Because you did some work for Biker Grove, Tracy Beaker, Wire in the Blood.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I had to make some money. So, I basically had gone along to watch a couple of my mates in a play at the Sunderland Empire. I'm good friends with a guy called Chris Connell, who's a local Geordie actor. And when I'd left the drama course at the Tyne Theatre, he'd gone in as a replacement for me. And I also know a guy called John Altman, who people will know as Nick Cotton from EastEnders. Yeah. And they were in a play called Bouncers by John Godbar, and I went along to watch them, me, my mum and my missus, and we had a great night out. And we, they were saying, you should get back into acting, it will be, you don't want to be sitting there when you're older and regret it. And So Chris gave us an intro to his agent, who was setting up an extras agency. She put me in, on her books, and that's it. I did 6 years as an extra. Which gave me a feeling for the industry. It gave me an opportunity to see what it was like on things that you've mentioned, Wire in the Blood, Biker Grove, Tracy Beaker. Doing extra work gives you an opportunity to have a look in the industry and see, that it's not actually as exciting as you might think. there's a hell of a lot of waiting around, and it's not learn your lines, go on camera and that's it. There's different angles to be shot, different points of view. And ultimately, if that doesn't put you off, then maybe you should, if you think you're good enough, give it a go. So I did 6 years. It was good money. I had some really good jobs. I had some speaking roles in a couple of really good things as well. I did 55 Degrees North, which, that was my very first job for the extra agency, and I actually got a job as I was wheel clamper number one, and I remember I had my own caravan. Can you believe it? And it was a comedy role with another guy in London who'd come up. He was a Geordie but lived in London, and he came up and did it with us, and we had 2 days filming on it. But the money was fantastic, and it was like, you're talking, you must talk 11 years ago now, and it was 750 quid a day, and wow. That was excellent. And I was like, I've arrived, I've made it, my next job was for Biker Grove, playing a security guard in what used to be Monument Mall, in Newcastle. It's not there now, and the building's there, but it's not called Monument Mall anymore. And I was there at 7 o'clock in the morning. They filmed my bit at 8 o'clock in the morning, and they made me sit there till 7 o'clock at night, and I wasn't needed again. And that was for 150 quid a day, and that was back down to earth with a bump. But I just loved it. I passed my degree, and I thought, right, I've done 6 years as an extra. I'm going to be a professional, and that's what I did.
Absolutely, and your CV, is amazing. Your IMDb, just go and have a look at it and see the variety of work that Steve's done. Done the local shows like Vera, a load of films as well. And often you're cast as a hard man, but you've also been cast as a lollipop man, Steve, as well. What would be your dream role?
For me, Coronation Street. When you do your degree, you're often you're told, in the degree that I did, you need to have an aim. And my aim was always, I'd love to be a Bond villain. Of course, anybody would love to do that. But Coronation Street, to be the baddie in Coronation Street would be good. If it was Emmerdale or EastEnders, fair enough. But Coronation Street's the one soap I watch. I watched it with my mum when I was a kid, and continue to watch it to this day.
Yeah.
I know the story and the characters inside out, and it's one of those things. You just hope that you're going to get an opportunity to cast for it at some point, and if you do, you've got to take your chance.
And last year's A New Breed of Criminal was significant for you, wasn't it? Because you didn't just star in it, you also wrote it too. That must have given the film a very different dynamic for you.
Yeah, for me, it was an amazing scenario to be able to, you know, to take something from a book to, you know, to a script to screen. I've got to thank Ian Lefrenier for all his help. Ian, of course, who wrote The Likely Lads, yeah, and, you know, Porridge and I Feel His Ian Pett, is somebody I was introduced to 8 years ago, and, you know, he's become a really good friend. And it was never my intention to sit and write a script, but, you know, it became a necessity because somebody who was going to write the script unfortunately couldn't. Again, COVID got in the way, and I just used that time in COVID to sit and try and write a script. And I wrote 168 pages for the first draft, knowing that a standard draft for a script is anything between 70 and 90 pages. And I knew I would have to whittle it down, but I sent it to Ian to get a feel for him, for what it was. And, I'll always remember, you know, he allowed me to do a Zoom call and record it. And I always remember his opening gambit was, you know, I've printed this off and my wife's going mad because we've had to chop loads of trees down in LA. but then he just goes, you know, the first 20 minutes is effing brilliant. The rest of it's an effing mess. And I was like, that's what you want to hear. You know, you don't want somebody blowing smoke up your backside. You want somebody to be honest with you. And Ian was. And then I sent him the second draft, which was still too long. It was about 110 pages. Then I sent him the third draft. And then when I got to the fourth draft, I was bang on 90 pages. And he said he was 85% happy with it. But me personally, I said, well, I don't think I can make many more changes to it. I think I'm more or less happy with it. And he goes, well, that's your first script. And that was it. And to be able to, you know, to be able to say that, you know, I'd written my script was great. You know, the director liked it, made minimal changes from his perspective, allowed him to have free rein on it. The distributor liked it, which was the main thing. You know, getting a distribution deal was key.
Yeah,
because a lot of films get made and they never see the light of day. So I knew this was going to go to market, which was fantastic. And then, you know, having the hands on the producing side, so doing the castings, you know, and then, you know, being there on set, not only as an actor playing the lead role, but also being there, you know, for everybody else. So we created a real family environment. You know, it's available obviously on Amazon and stuff like that, but for me it's just nice to be able to see it's there. And a little tribute to my mum in the film as well, on the side of the van. My mum had passed away during the making of the film.
Oh.
And the security company was unveiled when we do one of the blags in the film without giving too much away. The director and the producer, one of the producers, had called the security company Celia Safe after my mum. My mum's name was Celia. It was quite an emotional moment when I saw that.
Well, you can check out Steve's acting and writing and producing CV. It is on IMDb, plus your smoking new headshots as well. It's been fascinating finding out more about you and your career, Steve. Thank you so much for your time this morning. You can catch Steve every morning on the North East Footy Brekkie and on his YouTube channel at NUFC Matters as well. Plus, all his up-and-coming events are on there as well. Steve, thank you so much. It has been a real pleasure. I'm really jealous because I was like you. I had the acting bug very early on. I went to university to do theatre. I wrote plays and I also did teaching as well because I worked out I was going to be a much better teacher than I was actor. The work that I've seen you do, it's brilliant. It's brilliant. And I advise everyone to go out and check out Steve's work there. It is really, really fantastic to see someone from the Northeast doing so, so well. Just before we go, Steve, we know that you've also been a manager of lots of bands as well, and one of your bands is back together doing some more gigs this summer, and you want one of their songs to play us out. Tell us a little bit about the Long Sands, Steve.
Yeah, managed the Long Sands for quite a while, 4 years, top band. They're making a bit of a comeback at the Blythe Festival a little bit later this year, but one of the songs that we use as NUFC Matters theme tune is Worlds Collide.
So thank you, Steve, and I guess it's back to the day job tomorrow morning, getting ready to put up with the Smoggy and the Macam.
Yeah, looking forward to it, mate. As I say, there's always something to talk about, and it's we'll always be thankful for Dave for giving me the opportunity to do it and jump on the North East Footy Brekkie. But Daz, been a pleasure, mate. Thanks very much.
critics attack. It feels like I've been talking to myself again. But it's the only way you're ever gonna learn. You look back and it's all in the past. I'm dwelling on the thoughts I cannot say to you. If I don't say the words, then maybe it's not true.
It feels alright when they come and say to you.
On the world's machine, because I want it more than anyone can dream. You look back and it's all in the past. You tell me how you live by all the things you do. Well, you can't be yourself, but maybe I'm not you.
And it feels alright when they come.